Chapter 1. Saturday, November 27th, 1976. Maggie Thompson stared dismally through the metal bars that imprisoned her daughter. The fretting infant was inconsolable, and Maggie was at the end of her rope. Standing abruptly, she pushed through the swinging doors of the children's ward and headed for the exit.
"Mrs. Thompson, wait!"
A dark-haired man in uniform called from the nurse's station.
"I need to speak with you."
Her stomach flip-flopped when Maggie turned and saw the police officer approaching.
"Are you Margaret Thompson?"
Officer Ben Graham asked the startled woman. Fighting the extreme nausea that had plagued her entire pregnancy, Maggie nodded her head and excused herself hastily. When she emerged from the restroom, the big policeman was waiting in the corridor outside.
"Mrs. Thompson, I need to speak with you privately,"
Officer Graham said lowly, gesturing to a private office nearby.
"Please, follow me."
Swallowing convulsively, Maggie could only imagine what this visit from the police must mean. Her parents' harsh discipline of their grandchildren was the reason her infant daughter may never hear again. But the abuse accusations were being investigated by Child Protective Services, not the police. After gently escorting the frightened woman into the privacy of the small office, Ben asked her to be seated and then propped himself on the corner of the desk across from her.
"Ma'am, I'm afraid I need to inform you that your father has been injured during an attack at his home. He was taken to the Sacramento Medical Center."
"Who attacked him?"
Maggie asked in confusion.
"The Vacaville Police Department did not pass that information along to us, but I can try to find out for you if you'd like."
Yes, please. Did the police say what was wrong with him?"
Shaking his head in the negative, Officer Graham considered the woman's calm questioning and the fact that she hadn't asked after her mother.
"I'm very sorry to have to bring you bad news," he comforted before standing to leave. "I'll see if I can get any more information for you. Where's the best place to reach you?"
Maggie waved at the room around her.
"Right here," she replied. "My daughter's in the children's ward."
John's belief in a positive outcome for Catherine's medical condition had been badly shaken during the morning dialysis session, and his agitation was apparent. But Catherine knew he just needed a little quiet time to sort things out before he would be ready to discuss their meeting with the doctor. When they pulled into their driveway, Catherine took in the progress of the teenage work crew busily repainting the trim on the stone cottage. The elderly woman who owned the property insisted that the white paint they used during their renovations be replaced by red paint.
"I can supervise things here if you want to take a drive or something,"
Catherine offered.
"You sure? That's a whole lot of teenage testosterone out there,"
John muttered as he watched the boys scramble around the house in an attempt to look busy. With a snort of laughter, Catherine patted her husband's hand reassuringly.
"I'll bribe them with homemade pizza and the soda pop you picked up at the grocery store yesterday."
John hopped out of the vehicle to help Catherine down.
"I won't be gone long,"
he promised before dropping a quick kiss on her lips. Catherine watched him drive away before whispering a short prayer on John's behalf.
"Mrs. Brandt, do you want to see what we finished?"
the pastor's oldest son asked. Turning towards the eager adolescent, Catherine gave him a brief smile and replied,
"Of course, Troy. Let's see what you guys have been up to while we were gone."
Catherine surveyed the work and encouraged the young men to keep up their efforts before wandering into the house to begin work on the homemade pizza. When the first pizza came out of the oven, Catherine called the rambunctious teenage boys into the house and set out the soft drinks. She tried to hide her amusement at their antics, but quickly concluded that young men were the same on every continent. Their jesting and jousting reminded her of the boys that had lived in the missionary village in Ethiopia, each one trying to outdo the other. Food also seemed to be a common denominator in taming the unruly male masses. Feed them, and they become as docile as lambs. Catherine looked around three pizzas later and chuckled. Adolescent boys were sprawled out all over the yard, and most seemed ready for an afternoon siesta in the shade.
"Mrs. Brandt,"
Troy Thomas called as he burst through the front door.
"The guy from up on the hill says he needs your help right away."
Startled, Catherine followed the pastor's son into the yard, where the liveried chauffeur from the adjoining estate was pacing frantically.
The blood-covered man bolted to Catherine's side when he saw her and exclaimed, "Come quickly. Mrs. Baumgartner is injured."
"Are you hurt?"
Catherine asked.
"No, no," the man declared in a panic. "Hurry! There's blood everywhere, and Mrs. Norris can't get the bleeding to stop."
Turning to the ashen-faced teenager, Catherine directed, "Please tell John where I've gone when he gets home."
"She what?" John demanded furiously of the frazzled young man.
"Someone's hurt," Troy stuttered. "Mrs. Brandt went up there to help."
Muttering under his breath, John rolled up his car window and slammed the Rover into reverse. The tires spit gravel as he rapidly accelerated down the driveway. That crazy wife of his couldn't sit still. He was going to hogtie her to the bed once he got her home.
John screeched to a halt in front of the Grand Country House 90 seconds later and jumped from the vehicle. In aggravation, he pounded the heavy wrought iron knocker on the massive oak door unrelentingly until the housekeeper, Mrs. Norris, answered. Out of breath, the matronly woman waved him inside.
"This way," Agatha Norris panted. "They're in the morning room."
The sound of breaking glass sent Mrs. Norris scurrying towards the back of the house. John followed close behind and prayed he would find his wife in one piece when the crashing and thrashing noises became louder.
"Whoa!" he demanded as the elderly owner of the manor barreled into him at full speed. "What's going on here?"
"An ambulance is on the way,"
Catherine explained breathlessly.
"We just need to hold her still so I can keep pressure on those wounds until transportation arrives."
Struggling to keep the feisty old woman calm, John took in the chaos. Nodding to the driver, John grunted,
"Take an arm and let's see if we can get her into a chair."
"Maud?" Catherine called softly to the woman. "Do you remember my husband, John? You visited us at the cottage last week. Remember?"
Swinging her gaze toward the graceful young woman, Maud Baumgartner's confused mind took in the long dark hair and vibrant blue eyes.
"Christabella?"
she questioned in a quavering voice.
"Es tu venu, ma dear, Bella?"
Approaching cautiously, Catherine held out her hand.
"I want to help you, Maud. Will you let me help you?"
Taking the fragile hand, Maud pulled away from the men who were holding her and flung herself into the woman's arms.
"Bella,"
she cried.
"Ne me quitte pas, s'il te plaît." "I will not leave you,"
Catherine promised as she patted the perturbed woman's back gently.
"Sit here. John is going to look at your arms and see if he can stop the bleeding. When the ambulance comes, I'll ride with you to the hospital. There is nothing to fear. All will be well."
"Easy,"
John soothed as he examined each of Maud's arms. Addressing Catherine, he reported,
"She has deep lacerations on both arms. Did they say when the ambulance should arrive?"
Mrs. Norris muttered,
"We'll be lucky if they show up. They don't like coming out here."
Perplexed by the animosity in the housekeeper's voice, Catherine sent her a questioning look. But the matter was dropped when the faint sound of a siren made the conversation irrelevant.
"Sweetheart, let's go home. She's so out of it now, she won't know you're gone," John whispered. Catherine shook her head.
"I want to stay, John. The poor woman is so disoriented and scared. If she wakes up here alone, I don't think the nurses will ever get her calmed back down."
Exasperated, John took his wife's hands and gently pulled her from the chair.
"Mrs. Baumgartner is heavily sedated, and she'll stay that way until you change the orders, doctor. So, we are going home, now."
With a vexed sigh, Catherine allowed herself to be escorted from the hospital room.
"Are you always going to be so bossy?"
she huffed when her groom lifted her into the Rover.
"Yes, get used to it," John grumbled before closing the door firmly.
Catherine glared at her husband when he slipped into the driver's seat.
"I'm quite capable of self-determination," she declared unequivocally.
"And you're smart enough to know that you need something to eat and a good night's sleep. So stop being stubborn," he admonished.
After riding in stifling silence for a few minutes,
John tried to appease his angry wife. The nursing staff will call if you're needed.
That's not the point, John. I made a promise to a patient, and you've made me choose between keeping the peace or becoming a liar.
Wrong, John proclaimed hotly. I made you choose between your deteriorating health and that of a crazy old woman. When I promised to love and protect you, I wasn't just spouting off idle nonsense. If you refuse to take care of yourself, then I've got no choice. There's no way I'm going to let you sacrifice your well-being for a stranger.
Do you know how absurd that sounds coming from you? You rush into burning buildings, hang off of cliffs, and jump headlong into all sorts of trouble every time you go out on a rescue. Being a fireman and a paramedic is who you are. It's as much a part of your genetic code as the color of your eyes. But you have the nerve to discount the same trait in me. So tell me, John, are you willing to give up your career? Will you listen when I tell you that you can't do your job to the best of your ability?
Tight-lipped, John made a right turn and backtracked to the hospital. Happy? He growled through clenched teeth when they pulled up to the front entrance. Peevishly, Catherine looked at the hospital.
No, she admitted. I'm tired and hungry, but I don't like being told what to do like a child without a bit of common sense.
After a brief moment of disbelief, John dropped his head into his hands and dug his palms into his eyes. He tried counting to 10, then he took a big breath and exhaled forcefully. Shooting a hard look at his wife's angry profile, John put an end to the power struggle and pulled away from the curb. When they arrived home, Catherine hopped down out of the Rover and marched into the house without a backward glance. Slamming the heavy front door was a satisfying way to release some of her frustration.
Everything okay, Mrs. Brandt?
Troy mumbled through a mouthful of cold pizza.
Ah! Catherine yelled in surprise. You scared me half to death!
She stuttered at the lanky boy propped against her kitchen doorway. Embarrassed, Troy looked at his feet and muttered,
I wasn't sure if I should leave the house unlocked.
Catherine jumped again when the door banged open behind her.
What's wrong?
John yelled in panic. Then he noticed Troy and sent the kid a quizzical glance.
What are you still doing here?
Just cleaning up, he stammered. I'll head out now.
Sending the poor boy an encouraging smile, Catherine said,
Thanks for all of your hard work. We really appreciate your help. Did he need John to run you home?
Troy risked a glance at the irritable man hovering in the doorway.
No, that's okay. I can walk.
With a shake of his head, John gestured to the teenager. Come on, kid. I'll give you a lift. It's too late to be wandering down dark country roads. When the front door closed behind John, Catherine took a deep breath and stumbled into the bedroom. She kicked off the heavy boots and sighed in relief before pulling her favorite satin pajamas from the armoire. After staring at the dresser for a few moments, she put aside her pique and pulled John's sweatpants and a clean undershirt from the second drawer as well. Catherine stopped short when she stepped through the doorway from the living room and the kitchen. In addition to the pizza mess from lunch, red paint was splattered all over her sink and kitchen countertop. The dish towels were covered in filthy handprints and wadded up in crumpled heaps on the stove. Painting paraphernalia was scattered across every available surface, and crushed soda cans littered the floor around the garbage can.
Oh, brother,
she muttered under her breath as she surveyed the mess. John slipped the front door open quietly when he arrived home, hoping to find Catherine in a more agreeable mood. But the banging and clanking in the kitchen quickly disabused him of that notion. Cautiously approaching the doorway to the kitchen, John was surprised to see the top half of the exterior Dutch door flung open to the cold evening air until he caught the scent of gasoline.
What are you doing? He uttered in confusion.
Cleaning up the paint mess.
Here, John demanded. Let me do that. You shouldn't be breathing those fumes.
Oh, there's plenty of cleanup work to keep us both busy, she grouched.
Come on, baby. Let me do that, John cajoled.
Go get out of those bloody clothes. Take a bubble bath. Drink one of those nutritional shakes. Relax. Do whatever. I'll take care of this. Heaving a deep sigh, Catherine moved aside and let John take over the paint mess.
if you can finish this up, I can get started on the rest of this disaster.
Looking around, John observed, kind of looks like a frat house the day after a big party.
Smells like one, too. Catherine grimaced, wiggling her nose comically.